God said to Israel, I am the Lord, the Lord who brings you up out of the land of Egypt to be your God. You shall therefore be holy, for I am holy. You see, under the old covenant, Israel was God's special possession, his people that were to be consecrated and separated unto him and unto him alone. In Deuteronomy chapter 7, as Israel was about to cross over the Jordan River to the promised land, Moses repeated the law. And in it, in this repetition, he said, when the Lord your God brings you into the land which you go to possess and has cast out many nations before you, he goes on to tell him, you shall not make a covenant with them, nor shall you intermarry with them. Why not? Verse 4. For they will turn your sons away from following me to serve other gods. So the anger of the Lord will be aroused against you and destroy you suddenly. But thus you shall deal with them. You shall destroy their altars and break down their sacred pillars and cut down their wooden images and burn their carved images with fire. All these remnants of idolatry, they were to destroy, utterly destroy, lest they be influenced by them. Verse 6, for you are a holy people to the Lord your God. The Lord your God has chosen you to be a people for himself, a special treasure above all the peoples on the face of the earth. And over and over and over throughout the Old Testament, we find allusions to this very idea that God had selected Israel and they were to be faithful to him. And when they were confronted or shown idolatrous practices and they saw those graven images, they were to destroy them and not to be influenced by them. He warned Israel not to intermingle with the godless because they would be influenced to turn away from the one true living God to the false gods that were worshipped around them. And so we find words such as these in Deuteronomy 12. You shall utterly destroy all the places where the nations which you shall dispossess serve their gods. On the high mountains, on the hills, under every green tree, you shall destroy their altars, break their sacred pillars, burn their wooden images with fire. You shall cut down the carved images of their gods and destroy their names from that place. Why? Again, God knew how easily Israel could be moved away from God, away from worshiping him and him alone, and be influenced to worship the false gods of that day. What does all this have to do with you and me? It is still God's will for his people today, the church, to heed the warning about being influenced by the culture around us and as a result be drawn away from him. But I want to ask us a question this morning. How is it that we can be influenced by the culture around us to forsake God and worship false gods? If you were the enemy and you were trying to influence the people of God to turn away from God, how would you do it? Eric Holmberg, the founder and director of Real to Real Ministries, has written these words. Any struggle for the control of a culture must appeal to the mind and the heart by addressing both the ideas that power the intellect and the images that fuel the imagination. In other words, if you're going to try to capture a culture, if you're going to try to influence people to a particular end, appeal to their intellect and to their emotions. And if you can get into their thought processes and present images, vivid images before them to fuel their imagination, then you can persuade them. I wonder if that's why Paul would be guided to write these words. 2 Corinthians 11 verse 3. I'm afraid, he wrote these Christians, that just as Eve was deceived by the serpent's cunning, your minds may somehow be led astray from your sincere and pure devotion to Christ. What's Paul concerned about? The tempter getting into their minds, into their thought processes, and the ways of the world influencing them and pull them away from their devotion to Christ. Let me go back to Eric Holmberg's comment. As he talks about the appealing to the mind and the heart in order to capture culture. And notice what he says. Put simply, the usurper needs to rely heavily on propaganda. It's the art's ability to subtly appeal to the heart and the mind that makes it such a powerful force for cultural change. For this reason, successful revolutionaries have always paid special attention, notice, to the music, the literature, and the films of their times. That's where revolutionaries focus. That's where people who want to change minds focus, on things like music and literature and films. Because these affect the way we think. These affect the images before us and can draw us into a different way of thinking and into a culture that is anti-God. That's why I want us to consider this morning for a few moments the worship of the false god called entertainment. Notice, first of all, our culture of entertainment. And this is going to be nothing new to us, but I just want to remind us of how dominant the worship of this false god is in our culture. And when we speak of entertainment, we're going to include television, movies, the music industry, sports industry, the gaming industry, that is computer and video games. And I also want to include the constant use of different types of media within this culture of entertainment, like the computer, cell phones, iPods, and the like. I ran across an article. Actually, I was searching for such information. This article is entitled, Media Use in Kids Ages 8 to 18 Has Exploded. That's no revelation, I'm sure, to any of us. But here are some of the statistics given in this article by Common Sense Media. Over the past 5 years, there's been a huge increase in media use from nearly 6.5 hours to over 7.5 hours a day. Did you hear what I said? Media use, ages 8 to 18, 7.5 hours a day. Television, cell phone, computer, whatever the media, 7.5 hours a day. Now, due to multitasking, which I've seen much of this in my own family, kids pack a total of 10 hours and 45 minutes into this 7.5 hours because they're multitasking. Looking at the television, texting, or doing all sorts of other things at the same time. And my mind just doesn't work that way. But our kids can multitask. Mobile and online media have fueled huge increases in media use. But television viewing is still the main source of media consumption. There was a 2009 study by the Kaiser Family Foundation that reports that TV consumption, that is including viewing television on the internet or cell phones or iPods, has increased from 3 hours 51 minutes to 4 hours 29 minutes per day. Per day. The comments of one person, in far too many cases, the TV has become an altar in the center of our living rooms. Many times we'll just leave the TV on. First thing we do when we get up, turn the television on. We don't have to be watching it. We just are accustomed to the noise. But the more that it's on, the more our attention is directed to it. And so it's not just young people. It's people of all ages that get wrapped up in viewing television. Not that it's all bad, but I want us to see the potential and the real influence. One writer says, television doesn't just reflect our culture, it even goes beyond shaping our culture. Television has gradually become our culture. Popular new activities like social networking also contribute to increased media use. Things like Facebook, MySpace, or playing games, video games, or visiting video sites such as YouTube. I read this statistic, 3/4 of all 7th through 12th graders say they have a profile on a social networking site. And more, this dominates our time and thus influences our thinking. So what are the types of media that kids and adults consume? TV remains the dominant, 4 hours, 29 minutes a day. Music and audio media, 2 hours, 31 minutes a day. Computers, 1 hour, 29 minutes a day. On and on. But it's no surprise. We're saturated with it, aren't we? And notice this question. If kids are spending more time watching TV, playing video games, listening to music, going online than they are with their parents or teachers, whose messages about life are they absorbing? Let's broaden that. Because adults are getting into the very same things. If we are spending more time watching TV, playing video games, listening to music, going online than thinking about God and spiritual things, whose messages about life are we absorbing? Listen carefully. The world of entertainment and mass communications through television, radio, contemporary music, movies, magazines, art, video games, and pop literature is indisputably the most extensive and influential theological training system of the world. From commercials to sitcoms, from biographies to hit songs, from computer simulation games to talk shows, God's principles are being challenged every day. In very entertaining, palatable, and discreet ways, few Christians currently have the spiritual tools to identify and reject the garbage. That's a quote from George Barna, the pollster that identifies many of the struggles in the Christian community. It's an alarming statement, but I think he's on target. That because we're saturated by entertainment and the media that presents it to us, we're being more and more influenced by that. And the danger is that we, as God's people, don't have the spiritual tools to identify and reject the garbage. Because the garbage has entered our minds and has influenced our thought processes. So here are some negative effects of our entertainment culture. Number one, we develop stinking thinking. We develop stinking thinking. Colossians 3 verse 8 says, "Now you must rid yourselves of all such things as these, anger, rage, malice, slander, filthy language from your lips." But as you look at that list of things that we're to put away from our lives, we're to rid ourselves of, ask yourself, how many of these things are found in the content of our entertainment? One magazine stated this, "Foul language, including curses, offensive epithets, scatological language, sexually suggestive or indecent language, and censored language increased by 94.8% during the family hour between 1998 and 2002. And I would suggest it's only gotten worse since then. I learned a word, scatological. I looked it up. Scatology is interest in or treatment of obscene matters, especially in literature. So it means obscene language. And I'm going to go ahead and share with you the second definition. It's the biologically oriented study of excrement. If I may be plain, It's the scientific study of poop. Scatological. And I don't like that word that I just used, but it may just be the best word to describe much of the content of modern entertainment. That's why Proverbs would warn us, keep your heart with all diligence, for out of it are the issues of life. Keep your heart. It's talking about our minds. Be on guard. Because of all the things that can enter in your minds will issue in your life. And a negative effect of our entertainment culture is that it affects our thinking. Secondly, there is perversion of principles. Perversion of principles. Lewis Dodd and Tippins did a study of teenagers within the Church of Christ. And wrote a book a number of years ago, I believe 1989 was when it was published. But in it they wrote this statement, recognizing that the media are far more than entertainment is crucial. They are repositories of distinctive values that are presented in powerfully persuasive ways. I want to direct your attention to Ephesians 5, verses 3 through 7. Ephesians 5, verses 3 through 7. Notice what Paul writes to Christians. But among you there must not be even a hint of sexual immorality, or of any kind of impurity, or of greed, because these are improper for God's holy people. Nor should there be obscenity, foolish talk, or coarse joking, which are out of place, but rather thanksgiving. Let me pause there. Notice this list with me. Sexual immorality, impurity, greed, obscenity. I want to suggest this as one of the many passages we could use as a rating system for movies and videos we may watch. How many of our movies have these very things as their theme? Sexual immorality, greed, obscenity. Verse 5 goes on to say, for of this you can be sure, no immoral, impure, or greedy person, such a man as an idolater, has any inheritance in the kingdom of Christ and of God. Let no one deceive you with empty words, for because of such things, God's wrath comes on those who are disobedient. And so Paul concludes this paragraph by saying, therefore, do not be partakers with them. And yet we allow these very behaviors in our homes through the media that come in. Listen to this quote by Rebecca Hagelin in her book, Home Invasion, Protecting Your Children in a Culture That's Gone Stark Raving Mad. For many legitimate reasons, entertainment, education, research, etc., virtually every American parent has installed these easy routes for the enemy to infiltrate our homes. With the touch of a button or the click of a mouse, the vilest of human beings enter our living rooms and our children's bedrooms and engage in behaviors that we would never allow live, warm bodies to do. Yet there they are, hour after hour, day after day, displaying their violence, graphic sex acts, and foul language in front of our children while good parents hang out in the kitchen and make dinner. We allow them in our homes. And how can we not expect it to affect not only the minds of our young people, but our own minds? In the study that Lewis Dodd and Tippins did, they came up with these results that in video land, promiscuity and permissiveness are perfectly commonplace. Sex outside of marriage is the norm, and extramarital sex has no particular negative consequences. And they give statistics, and these are dated, but it only have gotten worse, I believe. In other words, if you see or know of a man and a woman engaging in sexual behavior on television, most of the time, they're not married. What does that do to our thinking? If we allow it, it'll cause us to think, well, it must be okay. And those principles, those godly principles upon which we must stand, are perverted by so much of the entertainment world today. There's also wrong role models being lifted up before us. Many young people, as well as older ones, know more about Hollywood celebrities than they do about Bible characters. And many of these celebrities do not model godly values at all. Brad Paisley wrote a song entitled Celebrity. In it, we find these words, because when you're a celebrity, it's adios reality. No matter what you do, people think you're cool just because you're on TV. And many, and news about them just dominates the news. And we get sucked into learning about their lives, and unfortunately, many people hold them up as role models. And Paul would say, follow my example as I follow the example of Christ. But the entertainment world works against that. It's holding up the wrong role models. And I need more time to address this one, but another effect of our entertainment world is woeful worship. Woeful worship. Because we bring this mindset of being entertained to church with us. Entertain me. And we gauge the worship service, the effectiveness of it is, was I entertained? It puts us in the spectator mode rather than the participant mode, in which we should be fully engaged in worshiping in spirit and in truth, as John 4:24 says. Now, today's technology has helped us in many, many ways. I did a lot of research for this on modern technology. But it also has impacted us in many negative ways. May we be alarmed and forewarned. And notice this quote, "This is serious business. Electronic mass media have become the dominating means of conveying and purveying modern culture among young people." It's how people want to capture the culture. And how people and how our enemy wants us to be drawn away from God. One of the most effective methods has been in the entertainment world. How do we counteract that? How do we counter our culture of entertainment? Number one, we need filters. We need filters. Filters like this, Psalm 101 verse 3. "I will set no wicked thing before my eyes. I hate the work of them that turn aside. It shall not cleave to me." Job had this filter. "I made a covenant with my eyes not to look lustfully at a girl." And we need to have these filters in place that I'm going to guard against. I'm going to turn my eye and ears away from this garbage, lest I be corrupted by it. Parents and grandparents, we need to help filter what our children and grandchildren are seeing and hearing. We got to be selective about what we watch. We must talk with our children and grandchildren about the hidden messages. Talk about the plot. Talk about what led to this decision. Talk about what's not said. And when a film glorifies revenge or retaliation or illicit sex or the rejection of lawful authority, it can be neutralized by discussing it. We need those filters in place. Secondly, we need to fast. We need to fast. We're dependent more and more upon or addicted to digital technology. To where it's become a very part of our lives. And one survey said one out of three parents and nearly half of 11 to 17-year-olds say there's not any specific time when they make the choice to disconnect or turn off technology so that they can have a break from it. It's just with us all the time. And the question arises, if we are in control of our technology or if it's in control of us. And I suggest to us, we need to fast on occasion. We need to say, I'm going to turn it off. I'm going to turn off the television. I'm going to turn off the computer. Or there's one scene in my mind from a movie where this man who was tempted by pornographic material on the computer took his computer outside and beat it with a baseball bat. If that's what it takes, that's what we need to do. But we need to fast from the garbage that's all around us. And we need to focus. We need to focus on the most important aspects of our lives. And that is our relationships. From Barna, one of his polls, he came up with these statistics. Only 39% of parents and 27% of tweens and teens say they get frustrated by technology because it makes it hard to have conversations. I was surprised at the low numbers. Though as far as parents, it's almost 4 out of 10. This is a frustration. Let me just be honest. How many times in talking with someone do they open up their phone and answer a text message? And yes, there are some that are adept at multitasking, but what does that communicate? Does it not communicate what I'm saying to you must not be that important? We need to focus on those things that are most important. Seek first the kingdom of God and His righteousness, and all these things shall be added to you. And to help us focus on that supreme relationship, we're going to have to fast. But also fill. Fill your mind with the right kinds of things. Finally, brethren, whatever things are true, whatever things are noble, whatever things are just, whatever things are pure, whatever things are lovely, whatever things are of good report, if there's any virtue, if there's anything praiseworthy, meditate, think on, fill your minds with these kind of things. There's too much garbage. Let's seek out the good, positive things. And it may be even a movie that has a genuine positive message. It may be music that has lyrics that are more suitable and helpful and inspiring. But we need to fill our minds with the right kind of things. And finally, we must put the Father first. We must put the Father first. Do not love the world or the things in the world. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life, is not of the Father, but is of the world. We need to put the Father first. Love Him supremely. Matthew Henry, in his commentary on this passage, wrote these words: "The world draws the heart from God, and the more the love of the world prevails, the more our love for God decays." We've got to love the Father supremely, intentionally, and allow that to have application in our daily lives by being aware of the messages that are bombarding us from different media, but being committed to loving Him supremely. There's the battle. It's for our minds, it's for our allegiance. But through it all, through all the noise, there's the message from God that I love you and I want you to do my will because that's best and it has eternal rewards. And so through the noise, I'm asking you to hear God's call through the gospel to surrender your life in obedience to His will. It may be that you're ready this morning, having studied and come to this conclusion that you, as a penitent believer, need to be baptized into Christ so that your sins can be washed away. I hope that you'll do just that. Or if we need the prayers of the church on our behalf to help us get refocused on those things that are most important, won't you let that be known? And won't you come right now as we stand and sing?